Hey folks, I'm Charlie Behrens and welcome to the Cripes Cast, the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and we are powered by Everlight Solar. Here's today's episode. Hey everybody, how we doing? As you can see, I am in some hotel room. I'm actually in Lafarge. My guest is from Lafarge originally, Luke Somm. He is the host of the PBS show Wisconsin Foodie. He owns the Driftless Cafe, award-winning chef. Driftless Cafe, by the way, in Viroqua. It's got this farm-to-table philosophy, which is super cool. Luke is a friend of mine, and it was just great talking with him about food, about where food comes from, about the environmental impact, about building community and kind of getting your food locally, what that means, how that builds up communities, how it's, you know, good for a whole host of things. And also we just riffed on a bunch of other stuff. Luke was at the Joey Song benefit that I did last weekend. I do that every year with Michael Gamal, who was on the podcast last year, and Butch Vig, another Viroqua guy. So anyway, Luke was there. We hung out in the hotel of the AC Hotel in Madison, Wisconsin. And now I'm in, to bring it full circle to my first mistake, I am not in Lafarge. I'm in Fargo. The F's got me screwed up in Farge and Fargo. Okay, Charlie, let's keep her moving. But anyways, I'm shooting belly dubs with Miles this weekend or this week. God, I can't talk. You guys ever have one of those days where you can't talk? This is one of them. And yet, all I'm doing today is talking. So hopefully it goes up from here. We'll see. TBD. I'm shooting belly dubs this week with Miles and then have shows in Fargo, Grand Forks, New Bismarck. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of Fargo. It's going to be cold, like negative 27. But you know what? There's a roof over my head and the bed's warm. So as my dad always used to say, shut up and be happy. So that's what I'm going to do. Anyways, I'm just going to kind of shut up since I'm rambling. And I love talking with Luke. He's a funny guy, a fun dude. So ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, here's my conversation with the Emmy-winning host of Wisconsin Foodie and the owner of the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua, Wisconsin, ladies and gentlemen, Luke Somm. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Cripes Cast. We are in, where are we, Luke?
We're in Madison.
Well, but we're in the AC Hotel, and we're doing this interview for Cripes Cast interview. Joey Song is going on, great benefit for epilepsy, and I'm doing this interview in your hotel room, which you've been gracious enough to let me use. On top of that, the mic stand in this interview is a turned to the side garbage can propping up a cellular telephone device, which is the camera.
Yeah, exactly. This is about as DIY as it gets, but as the hallmark of a true professional, man, you're pulling it off. You're killing it.
Thanks, man. Thanks. I feel like you're just pumping my tires.
No way. I'm not the guy to pump your tires.
It's kind of nice. It's kind of nice to this is the I went to school for this, believe me.
That Big Ten education paying dividends.
I mean, my journalism professor, actually, I think my journalism professor would applaud it.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know that that's true now that I'm thinking about it more. It should have been more prepared. Problem is, I forgot my, anyway, so for folks who are listening, we're doing this interview with my phone as the, if you're watching this on video, you are seeing a phone that is propped against a garbage / recyclery from the AC Hotel. We're on the sixth floor looking out over a snowy Madison winter day, one of the first and few snows of the season so far.
Absolutely. It's been kind of dry and, it freaks me out a little bit. I tell you, the thing that actually is the most comforting about this snow, I was thinking about this when I woke up this morning, all the folks that traveled in from Los Angeles to do this thing, I could see them outside walking around last night like, oh yeah, you know, the Midwest, Madison is a great place to live. Like, it's not that cold in the winter.
Don't tell your friends.
Exactly. Stay out.
Yeah.
No, it's good. We want them here, of course.
Well, yeah, of course. But, I mean, that's a reality of climate change, man, that places are going to get more unbearable to live. I mean, L.A.'s been unbearable for long before climate change. Spokane's a guy who used to live there. No, I'm kidding, all you LA folks. There's some good parts.
Yeah, it's enchanting.
Sure, we'll go with that. But they do say that the Midwest is kind of an ideal, or not ideal, but most ideal place to be in this rapidly changing climate. From a food perspective, I didn't intend on jumping off topic.
No, that's a change. That's good. I'm going to jump on that, though.
Please.
January 24th, 2021, CBS This Morning runs this episode about safe havens for climate change refugees on their news program. And the number one city in America to escape climate change is Madison, Wisconsin.
And why?
Why? Because we have access to so much fresh water.
Yeah.
The population density here is relatively low in the upper Midwest.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're good at growing stuff. So, like, feeding a population center isn't out of our wheelhouse. I work that in, though, to, you know, a lot of my food and the storytelling work that we do.
And we'll just, you know, I'm listening to you. I'm just checking your levels here. So I'm very much into what you're saying. So
you're doing great.
I just don't want you to think since we broke eye contact that I'm not listening to this. And when you saw that, what hit you and how did it make you? Did it make you? It's kind of a good feeling since obviously we're here and you're very close to it in Viroqua. But it's also a scary thing. It's a reassuring thing. But then it's also like, oh, people are coming here. Kind of do you protect yourself in these situations, or do you open your doors to people to come in?
Yeah,
you know?
I think it's a hot mix. Oh, I'm sorry. Who is the guy who doesn't have his phone off?
Oh, my that's God. All right.
It's Lucy Danforth.
Oh, jeez. Well, if it's Lucy,
exactly.
You gotta tell Lucy I says hi.
I will. I will. Everybody loves Lucy. They should make a show about that.
They should do that. I concur.
You know, that mixed feeling, honestly, is like, if you look at a lot of the sovereign nations that are in Wisconsin, you know, if it's Ho-Chunk or Oneida or Potawatomi or Menominee, or, you know, you see stories of food insecurity and food sovereignty and that huge push. I think through my work and my cooking, like, I just want people of the upper Midwest to see what a treasure this place really is before it's too late. You know, that identity of who we are and where we're from, I really try and get diners to, like, recognize that through the food. And the idea of pressing climate change and a rapidly changing population, I use that kind of as, like, it's time to wake up. If we don't realize it, when all of Phoenix and LA decide that they need to relocate here because there's no fresh water, or, you know, things just become too unstable with climate change. The people of the Midwest, we're nice. We want people to come in. And of course, you show up. My favorite thing about the Midwest is, like, it doesn't matter how you vote or how you pray or what you look like. If things go wrong, it's everyone from both sides of the community that show up to help out.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love traveling in different places and coming back and just knowing that, you know, that Midwestern nice, while some people say it's like our handicap, it's also a really, really beautiful thing. And I want the people here to realize that it's a beautiful thing before it's gone.
When you say before it's gone, are you saying before, like, the climate changes the world kind of a thing? Or are you saying that that changes the people here change?
Yeah.
What are you saying?
The culture specifically. Yeah. You know, I mean, even now, like, you look at food insecurity, things like that, there are people in the upper Midwest have the opportunity and the privilege to enjoy good, clean food wherever they go. I mean, like, every small town in this state has a farmer's market.
Yeah.
We come from an agricultural heritage. When you see population explosion and in places that it was traditionally agrarian or forested or, you know, wild spaces kept intentionally wild, when people move into those places, it forever changes it. You know, it's like you never see farmland go into development and then go back to farmland. It's just not the progression of our culture. So I think, like, before it's gone for me is noticing the sweet spot. You know, we're right here, we're right now. And like, to get people of the upper Midwest to realize this isn't culinary flyover country. This is something special. There's a lot of tradition here. There's a lot of underrepresented tradition here. So like, getting to know your friends and neighbors, developing a trusting relationship. And like, for me, food is the only medium I have. I'm not funny. I can't sing really well. So like,
wow.
I gotta lean into what I got.
I think you're a funny guy. Oh. I mean, come on, you know, you're a multi Emmy award winning TV host, you know, which is very cool. And what I love about, and the Driftless Cafe, what I love about the Driftless Cafe is, doesn't all the food there come from a 100-mile radius?
We try. Yeah, that's like a huge imperative. I mean, that's my metric for success in the business, is to see how much of our food budget can be spent within a 100-mile radius.
Okay, why is that important?
Why is that important? Because I think it's really important. You know, Viroqua, for those who don't know, it's a very small community, population.
Show them on the hand, dude.
Yeah, okay. So we're in Madison right now, and that's like right there. Viroqua is in what is known colloquially as the Driftless region in southwestern Wisconsin.
So and back it up even further, yeah. Why is it called the Driftless region for those who don't know?
Sure, the Pleistocene Plateau. In the last period of glaciation in the upper Midwest, so like 14,000 to 20,000 years ago, there was a pocket of unglaciated terrain that is in the northeastern corner of Iowa, southeastern corner of Minnesota, a little bit of Illinois, because, you know, they get a little bit of the magic, and then a lot of Wisconsin's southwestern corner. The glaciers didn't roll over that terrain. So a lot of Wisconsin, you know, people think of it as relatively flat, beautiful, forested. That part of the state is punctuated by very deep valleys, very high ridge tops. The terrain there really ideally supports small family farming, small scale agriculture. It's too varied in its terrain to have really large producers there. So it's become kind of the mecca for organic food. Vernon County, where my restaurant is, has the second highest concentration of organic farms in any county in the United States of America. And, you know, what that means for me is like, if I'm putting that money into farmers and food producers within a 100-mile radius, I know that I'm supporting community. I know that that money, if they're taking it in, it's going to, you know, the implement store down the road. And then the gravel guys come in every spring and put a new load of gravel on. And that money stays in our community so much longer. And that financial sovereignty is really, really imperative for small communities in rural places in America trying to fight for, like, their right to thrive, almost. And so I wanted in that space people to be able to come in and, you know, there's a lot of division, I think, in America right now, specifically rural America.
Yeah.
You know, the 2016 election definitely opened our eyes to that. And I want people to be able to come in and even if they maybe don't vote the same as the people in the restaurant, they know the farmers and food producers on that menu because we spell it out very articulately. This comes from this farm on just about any ingredient on our menu. So they can participate in the community. I think that that's one of the things that has been so amazing to watch. Like, a majority of our clientele come in from Madison, Minneapolis, Chicago, Milwaukee, and they support this tiny rural community that's connected to the local farming culture. And that is, like, I think a lot of the experience for people. They just want to see something else.
Yeah, and I think when you can do business with people and connect customers with those farms, they get to know people, they recognize the names, they're talking to each other, and, you know, that's the thing that's gotten messed up in this country is people aren't talking face-to-face. It's just yelling. It's talking at each other, not to each other. So I like how, you know, it's sort of a form of conversation. I also like the aspect that bringing food in locally, it's just a lower carbon footprint. And then what's on the plate is what is capable of being grown at this particular season? Because your menu changes often.
Yeah, every day. Yeah. Every day. So, like, the lunch menu, you know, we change that up probably, like, once, twice a week. We'll fluff it up with whatever feels right. But the dynamic of the restaurant and the way that, you know, I started it, and we've been doing it for 10 years, is, like, every single day, those small plates and those entrees need to change to reflect what's coming in the back door. You know, and it's not always easy. Like, this time of year, it's we do have some local greens producers, but, you know, a lot of rutabagas, a lot of sweet potatoes, a lot of, like, storage crops that get put up over the winter in the Midwest. So you really have to be inventive and play in different ingredient sets, play to different palettes to create menus that are constantly evolving and changing.
I think that's so cool, is being creative with what is kind of the most environmentally sustainable thing. I mean, I feel like all of our problems, you know, are just because there's not enough creativity.
Sure.
Like, even if you look at how humans interact with each other, you know, a lot of people are like, we got to change the laws to force people. Like, I feel like if we as people lean into the good and the shittiness of the human condition, mm-hmm. and just be more creative with how the human condition works, knowing, like, people are people, they are going to choose this option.
Yeah.
You know, and we just make that option sort of economically viable, or give them an economically advantage, or make them make more money, or make it easier to choose the thing you want them to choose. I think it just takes people being more creative on how to do that. You know?
Totally. You know, and it goes back into your idea of, like, communication and dissonance. You know, I think, like, people with money, and I know that I've been guilty of this, like, you know, preaching, like, vote with your dollars, specifically when it comes to food. But I think even on a more broad level, like, that idea of breaking down dissonance, you know, we as human beings might have different values, you know, different moral compasses that drive us, but inherently, we're still humans. And I think, like, the medium of laughter, the medium of entertainment and music, and the medium of food, we have that ability to kind of cut through that noise and, like, you know, the songs that you might like today are different from the songs that I might like, but we're having a hell of a time just hanging out with each other, you know, in the beautiful AC hotel here in downtown Madison. And that's enough at the end of the day, right? We have this ability to connect over all these mediums that are inspired by creativity. And I think it's a wonderful thing that I really, from my position of privilege, I really want people to, like, be able to celebrate at the same time. And that's not taking away any of the diversity of perspective, right? Not everyone is having a great time right now. I'm sure we could go outside and run into people who are having a really, really rough time. But I do think that that understanding, and at least the processing of, like, oh man, you and I connected. So if I can take some of that goodwill and good energy and go downstairs, and when I walk out, you know, maybe it is just asking somebody how they're doing today. That's my favorite thing to do to Quick Trip employees. You know, go to the convenience store, ask them what the best part of their day is. They get routined in that script. You know, do you have the Quick Rewards card? We'll see you next time. All that jazz. Like, they say it a million times a day, but you throw that one wrench in, like, hey, what's the best part of your day? And they have to stop and think, and suddenly you're having a human interaction.
Oh, yeah. No, that's that is true. I mean, I used to be a pretzel roller at Annie Ann's.
Yeah.
And, man, the worst part of my job was doing the cashier thing.
Sure.
Like, I was only good when I was rolling pretzels. I was a bike mechanic, too, so I had greasy hands sometimes. So if my hands were too greasy, someone might complain because there's a window right there, and then I get sent on cash register. Dude, because here's the thing about when you have a line like that, as a cashier, you're just trying to end the line.
Yeah.
End the line, because as soon as one person's in line, other people might think, oh, that's a tasty thing.
Yep.
You know, and so then they get in line, and then you have more work. It's almost like, as a worker, you are working just to get less work done, you know, just to do less work.
Right.
So, yeah, you're always in that pattern of, well, yeah, what do you need? Let's go. And so, like, as a worker, you know, to almost have to break out of that, you know, and say, like, what am I really here for?
Totally.
And now, I don't know that the 15, 16-year-old self of mine would want to hear this this advice either. But yeah, we have so many interactions that are just brush past in our day. And, you know, I had a guest on, Jeff Ditzenberger, who is, he has a mental health awareness thing, and he was talking, it's called TUGS, and it's, he is a farmer and a veteran, and it's all about suicide awareness and in those communities. And he was talking, he was at a Quick Trip, and he saw a fella, and he just said, "How was your day?" And you know, this fella had a cat, and he was very sad because the cat was going to go. And he told him, "It's just a hairball." And it was. Yeah. And he took that extra beat, and it really changed this guy's life, as it turns out. Because he said if that cat went, he was going to go with it.
Oh, man.
You know, it was just a hairball.
Yeah.
You know, and how many interactions do we just like that? Do we let go away? And I think the cool thing about food is it's something that everyone's got to eat.
Seriously.
We all have it in common.
Yep.
Not everyone likes comedy, not everyone likes music, but we all, you know, have to eat.
Yep.
So doing so can spark a conversation. It can just be a quick thing you do, but it's something we all have in common. So it's a cool opportunity that you kind of are taking advantage of, not just with your restaurant, but also with your show.
Yeah.
How did that get started?
Sure. You know, Wisconsin Foodie has been on PBS for, I don't know, like 16 years, 15, 16 years. About 5 years ago, I had done segments. It started probably 8 years ago where the crew, and it's a riot. I mean, as far as like a filming style, yeah. Arthur Ersink, the creator and executive producer, you know, he's got like an organic documentary style. So he likes to just go in and kind of capture things as is.
Mm-hmm.
And so he came to my restaurant, and it was a bitterly cold winter day in February, legitimately like 20 below.
Mm-hmm.
And I had prepared all this food, and they showed up with their cameras, and I don't know if they lit it at all, but they just walked in, and Arthur's like, no. We want to watch the process. We want to get involved in the process. I was like, oh, okay. So like you take all this prepared food and you push it to the side and you start over. And the ability to maintain a conversation and stay focused on what's happening, you know, between the people, but also to keep focused on the food and the plating and like where the direction of this dish is going. It went really well. It was really fun. And I think it allowed me to just be myself. Probably for a majority of my career, you know, being a chef, there's a performative aspect to it, specifically when you're in front of people.
Yeah.
It's hospitality, man. I mean, like, even when you're not having a good day, which happens, like, you go out there and you make people feel seen and loved. But that gave me an avenue to, like, I guess get my foot in the door, and then we just had subsequent callbacks. And then I was actually in L.A., and I was meeting with an executive from the Food Network. And I had done a little bit of TV work, like a little bit of testing out there. And and I'll never forget this. Her comment to me was, "Nobody gives a shit about the Midwest. From a television market standpoint, we're tiny."
Name names, dude. Yeah. I want to know who it was.
I'm not naming names.
I want to know what network it was. Them fighting words.
I know, right? Right?
Even though it was probably accurate at the time.
Yeah. But, like, that for me, like, I've always felt like being from a small town, Lafarge, population 745, my whole career, my whole life, I've been punching up. You know? That was like rocket fuel. And I got back from that trip, and I actually ran into some folks associated with the production of Wisconsin Foodie in Milwaukee. I was cooking an event, and they said, "Hey, you know, we might have an opportunity. Would you be open to, like, filling in more and becoming more involved?" And I was like, well, yeah. As long as the parameters of who I am on camera don't have to change,
right.
You know, who I am, I'd be really interested in that. So 5 years later, you know, we're still doing it. Like, and people ask all the time, like, "Are you ever going to run out of stories? Like, when do you..." And that is just like a complete fallacy, because your food, everything that you eat throughout the day comes from somewhere. And a lot of it is produced, you know, in the heartland. So like a stretch for stories, it's really, it's not there. we can find stories of people doing what they do because they love what they do and doing it to the best of their ability right in our own backyard. And it's a way to kind of, you know, explore the larger community of perspectives through sitting down and sharing a play.
Yeah, and in doing that, what are some perspectives, cultural perspectives? I remember seeing an interview with you on some news station, but you were talking about, you know, a lot of people view the Midwest, as this person in LA did, as sort of like flyover, homogenized, white, boring.
Yep.
You know, but what sort of storylines have you seen in doing this show that sort of counter that narrative?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think the easy one for me is like, and, you know, we have 11 federally recognized indigenous nations here.
Yes.
I believe that there are 14, so there are three that are unrecognized. But, you know, those storylines, like looking at the Ho-Chunk Nation, for example, which is it's their ancestral homeland in the Driftless region and across most of Wisconsin, even Madison. You know, their food traditions go back 20,000 years. That's where their oral traditions go back. So when I was talking about the glaciation period that missed southwestern Wisconsin, the Ho-Chunk people were here, and they were living and thriving in communities. When you expand that perspective, like when you talk about local food, or you talk about food with a connection to this place and the storyline and progression of what we now call Wisconsin, there is endless opportunity to learn more about different cultural perspectives. If you go to Oneida, who were displaced from the Finger Lakes region, right after they fed George Washington's starving troops at Valley Forge, they were responsible for basically feeding the Revolutionary Army that brought America to what we know it today. But as soon as George Washington took office, he ordered General Sullivan to go back into that region of the Haudenosaunee people or the Iroquois Confederacy, burn their villages and slash their crops. So they were displaced to Wisconsin. They grow corn, this sacred white corn, on the Oneida Rez today that predates their history in Wisconsin. They use it for ceremonial purposes, but like that for me is an ingredient that I want to learn about, I want to respect. I want to nurture that storyline so that way if people walk into the Oneida One Stop or they're, you know, in a restaurant somewhere and they're presented with this corn, they can understand the emotional gravity of, like, some of these pieces. Mm-hmm. The Hmong people, you know, the people displaced by the Secret War. I've got a dinner coming up right down the street here at the Deliciouser in Madison. And it's Hmong Chef Ye Vang.
He's been on the podcast.
Has he? Oh, isn't he a good dude?
He's got a... I actually took his excerpt from the podcast and I put it in my Midwest Survival Guide book.
Yeah.
Because it's the Hmong people in Wisconsin have dealt with, you know, racism over the years. And what people don't realize is that the reason there is a big Hmong population in the Midwest is because they helped the United States in the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
And they were promised refuge in the U.S. A lot were not granted it. They had to go to refugee camps, as the case of Ye's folks.
Yep.
And then finally, after a trialing venture to get from their village to this refugee camp and then get to the U.S., you know, and then you are met with what? You're met with racism. And yeah. And so that's, I find that to be a very interesting story too. But anyways, I didn't mean to interrupt your story.
No.
He's a great dude. Funny dude.
Oh my God. Yeah. And it's like, it's the most innocent, sweet, funny. Like, I really want to get Ye unplugged someday to even get him to curse. Like, I'll be on conference calls with this guy and he's, you know, freaking this and freaking that. And I think it's just hysterical. He may be the most Midwestern of all of us.
Have you been to his restaurant?
Yeah.
Yeah, I went there and before my show, and he made us so much food. And I was like, oh my God, dude. And it was so good. Yeah. Everything was so good. Even made us these walking tacos because, you know.
Yeah, why not?
He experiments with stuff there. It's a very cool restaurant. Yeah, I don't know. Everyone should check it out.
Totally. I mean, you will leave TFF'd. I know that's what he did to you that night. Like, if you cancel your plans afterwards, specifically if they're amorous, because you're not going to be doing that.
Yeah. Definitely don't do a stand-up show, back-to-back stand-up shows after that.
But we're bringing in Alex Hanasaka to you just for the other perspective. He's a Lao chef in the Racine, Kenosha area. And, like, I had filmed with Hmong Farmers, like, 2 weeks before filming with Alex. He has a pop-up sap. It's really delicious. And I was like, oh, man, yeah, I just filmed with these Hmong Farmers and, like, got a lot of the storyline and, like, the shamanistic culture tendencies. And, wow, what a crazy story. And he just looked at me. He's like, I'm not Hmong, bro. I'm Lao. And I was like, oh, God, like, hard stop.
Yeah.
And so, you know, over the course of, like, cooking with both of these guys and making television with them, but just, you know, creating community with them, we pitched this idea, like, what happens if we cooked a dinner and we talked about the hard shit? You know, we brought a Lao kid who was born in a refugee camp in Thailand for Lao refugees, and we brought Yia in, who's a Hmong kid born in a Hmong refugee camp in Thailand and is the son of Hmong refugees. And we ask them to cook a dinner that the first course starts, like, with their families, you know, cultural traditions around the 1950s era. Like, what's a dish that's prominent in your family? The second course is, like, what's your modern take on Lao and Hmong food? And then the third course, the kicker, create a course together.
Mm-hmm.
Because these are people that, like, for the last 50 years, historically and culturally, have hated each other. The Lao kingdom was backed by Russia and China during the Secret War, so there was money coming in from the outside. The Hmong people were backed by the CIA and the Allied forces. More bombs were dropped on Laos in 7 years than in all of World War I and II combined, all the munitions. It's wild how that small country got so politicized so quickly and had so much money rolling through it. To have these chefs come together to share cultural perspective for the diners, but then to also, like, create a dish in unison, right? We're all humans. We all eat. What happens if we put our differences aside and just connect and, like, set the table forward?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's just another example of using, you know, food as sort of storytelling, and not just storytelling, but, you know, history, remembering good and bad parts of history, and also seeing, you know, kind of where we are today and how is history choosing to repeat itself? How are humans continuing to be human?
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of why, and then you kind of take the conversation to why have we not gotten past the thing that we've always done, which is hate each other, kill each other. And, you know, and do that cycle over and over again. But also good things.
Yeah.
Also love each other. Also come together over food. Also laugh.
Exactly.
It's just, but I do think it's just, it's what it does, what, you know, you telling me this does really highlights the really cool ways food can open up conversation.
Totally.
And that's awesome.
Hey, folks, I want to let you know that the Kripescast studio is powered by Everlight Solar. That's right. We got the solar panels on the roof. It is saving me on my electric bill. And it's also, you know, part of the long process to help save this planet and preserve it for future generations. Hopefully, you know, that's the goal there. So save some money, lower your carbon footprint, get a free consultation from Everlight Solar. They'll come, they'll check it out, see if solar panels are going to work on your house and what the cost would be and how much money it's going to save you. So check them out, everlightsolar.com. Also, folks, Fleet Farm. Holidays are over, but I tell you what, ice fishing is just starting, and that's what we want to do. We want to get out there, get on that ice. Fleet Farm's got you covered, and not only that, they got supplies for home projects and all the stuff that you got to do, because it's too cold outside to do anything anyway. So, you know, get out there to the Fleet Farm, get everything you need for whatever, whatever it is. Hey, even if you want a new crock pot, they got that too. Check them out, Fleet Farm. And finally, folks, if you want to support the Cripescast, check out everything we got going on Cripescast.com. We got tour dates from the good old-fashioned tour, Midwest merch. We got these Team Soda versus Team Pop t-shirts that are fun. Made in the USA. It's all good stuff. Check it out. And if you want to see behind the scenes stuff, check us out. Patreon.com/CharlieBarons. All right, let's get back to the podcast and watch for deer.
How did you get your start in all this? What was your childhood like? You grew up in Lafarge.
I grew up outside of Lafarge. Yeah. Lafarge. We're headed for that victory. Mm. So I grew up, my parents were kind of like, I wouldn't say they were hippies, but they were definitely part of the Back to the Land movement. So they grew up, in southeastern Wisconsin, in Walworth County.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they got all preggers, early, like my brother's 8 years older than I am. So my mom was, you know, a teenage mom, my dad wasn't much older, and they decided they needed a new life, something that was a little bit more practical for them and raising a family. So they moved to Vernon County, kind of on a lark. And my mom and dad were, you know, hunters. My mom gardened. We at that point in our lives, or in their lives, they were poor. And they had the resources available to be able to, you know, understand how to garden and farm a little bit. So I grew up with a big garden and my mom always cooking, because if you've been to Lafarge, there's not a lot of there in like food choices.
Right. And there's that one gas station.
There's the Zip Stop, baby.
The Zip Stop.
Zip Stop represent two Z's, baby.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, you know, like growing up in that area, I got a job at 15. My dad owned a construction company. He said, you're 15, you're getting a job. And so I didn't want to do construction. I didn't particularly like it. So I went and became the first male car hop ever at the Lafarge Root Beer Stand.
Did you have roller skates?
I did not have roller skates.
What a shame.
I know, but you can appreciate the intention of a lot of the patrons. Like, you drive a truck, I drive a truck. You know, kind of the backwoods boys rolling up in the trucks expecting, you know, someone of their own age to come out, maybe cute, and, you know, a young girl to like, oh, hi, whatever, flirt at the car. And here's this dude who's wired super tight. I go, who wants a chuck wagon?
Did you have a rose tattoo on your neck at that
point? I didn't. No, I hadn't gone.
That would have been fun, though. That, I would have paid to see that.
Yeah, exactly. The you know, mid-90s with the rose tattoo.
Yeah.
But about after like 2 weeks, the owners of this place, they moved me to the back of the house. They figured out it was bad for business to have Luke out there hollering at the customers about getting jacked on Root Beer floats.
Especially in your cutoff jeans.
Yeah, my jorts, baby.
Yeah,
you know
shorts,
it.
Yeah.
It's almost like you were there.
I, you know, maybe I was.
Yeah, you probably were.
I've lived a few lives.
So I went from there to like Subway. I'm a certified sandwich artist.
Attaboy.
Yeah, my mom still keeps a certificate every
on
time.
On the fridge?
No, not on the fridge, but like if I'm feeling, if I'm too high and mighty, or if, you know, like when I go and cook in her kitchen,
mm-hmm.
if she doesn't like the amount of salt or butter or whatever I'm putting in something,
mm-hmm.
she can kind of sneak it back onto the table because she's vindictive like that.
That's what's up, man.
Yeah.
That's funny. Don't forget your roots, baby.
Exactly. Oh, you're a sandwich artist.
Yeah.
Culver's, supper clubs, and then, you know, going to school. Fun fact, I wanted to be Butch Vig growing up. I mean, it was,
you're a music guy.
I was at that point in time. It was like a medium that was accessible. It gave me an identity. I was in bands, and I wanted to get as far away from southwestern Wisconsin as I could when I was 18.
Yeah.
Did you ever have a moment like that where you're like,
hell, yeah,
I gotta get the hell out of
here? Yeah, actually, I wanted to go to California and play in a band.
Sweet.
You know?
Yeah.
That was kind of it.
Yeah.
I wanted to, and didn't have to, or New York or something. I didn't know what the hell I wanted. And by the way, I'd never been to California. I'd never gotten on a plane until I was 18 years old.
Right.
You know? And so I didn't know what I was talking about. But that's what I wanted to do.
What did you think? Like, I know that the first time I flew into L.A., and I was in my 20s, 30s, I thought that it was going to be a complete caricature, something between like the Red Hot Chili Peppers and NWA. Mm-hmm. I was terrified, kind of flying into LA.
Yeah.
Did you have a similar experience? Or
no, I was. I didn't fly in first time I went. I drove out in this minivan. Told this story a few times. The one I shot, and my dad made me buy, I shot with a shotgun. It was accidental, an accidental discharge.
You're one of those guys? And I swear this never happens
it
to
does,
me.
And honestly, it was my brother's gun to make it all the weirder.
Oh my God.
That complicates your immature innuendo a little bit,
yeah.
Doesn't it? Now?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It does. Yeah.
Now you're making some even weirder jokes here.
Well, you know, I'll go there. I'm a line guy.
But, yeah, so anyways, I went out and, I didn't have a ton of preconceived notions because I was mostly an idiot. Mm-hmm.
You know, I hear you say that a lot, but you know you're not an idiot, right?
No. Don't tell me that.
Seriously? Don't tell me that. Yeah. Is this a defense mechanism?
No, it's always if you set the bar low, you can walk over it. So don't make me bring that bar high. Don't you make me work harder. Let me call myself an idiot. Let me keep the bar low. And if I surprise you, God bless.
That's great.
Yeah.
How about like, you know, do you ever stop and think about, I told your mom and dad this when they came into the restaurant. Like, first and foremost, I'm proud of you.
Oh, man.
What you do is really hard.
Yeah.
It's not always easy to be the funny man. And
well, I'm not always funny.
No, well, you know, I'm not always a great cook.
Yeah.
But like even just the aspirations to do that, it takes so much discipline and work. And the fact that you bring so much joy to so many people. I remember during COVID, like, I mean, every other time I went on the internet, I was getting, you know, text messages like, well, this guy's hysterical.
And oh, that's nice.
You know, you're blowing up the world with laughter.
Well, thank you for saying
that. Oh, dude, no, thank you.
You know, it's one of those things of where you can, I just spent time doing it, and you can spend time doing anything. And I worked a lot of odd jobs growing up, and I started working, like, at a very young age. Like, probably 11 years old, I think I got my first job. I was working at a yarn house. And
a yarn house?
Yeah, I was sorting yarn for
Seriously?
Mrs. Grotti. Yeah, that was one of my first ones. She was my mom's friend. Well, basically, I started mowing the lawn there.
Okay.
Because my mom went to this yarn house with my Nana.
Okay.
And they would buy yarn.
Sure.
And the woman who worked there said, I need someone to mow the lawn. So they're like, turn it. I know the guy. So then I mowed the lawn with like an electric lawnmower.
Okay.
But like one that you plugged into an extension cord.
Oh, those are the worst.
Cut the extension cord.
Of course you did.
I'm going to tell you this right now. Do not go fix an extension cord while with your pocket knife. While it's still plugged into the wall.
Did you grow up with, like, no supervision? It was just feral Charlie Bear.
Yeah, I mean, I'm set 2 of 12, man.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, if you're going to learn how to fix an extension cord the hard way, and that's by electrocution. Yeah. No, what it does is it kicks you back. Also, fun fact, not the first time I electrocuted myself in that way. I did it years later, 19 years old. I cut something in this warehouse, and I was trying to, you know, fix it.
Yeah.
Same way, and I forgot to unplug it. So I am an idiot.
No,
actually.
You're not. You're electrifying.
That is a good one.
Thank you.
What the hell were we talking about before we got on the conversation to me? This is supposed to be
no.
A conversation.
I have some legit question, though.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're at this point in your career where you could presumably live just about anywhere. But you don't. You call Wisconsin home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like me, you left and you came back and you've had this success here. What does, like, the Wisconsin identity mean to you?
Well, what it means to me is that this is a place that doesn't take itself too seriously. It's a place of hardworking people. It's a place where you don't... talk about yourself first in a conversation. You say, hey, how are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you say, tell your folks that, you know, I say hi.
Yeah.
You know, you say, make sure you watch out for deer. All those cliches that I make jokes and t-shirts about, I mean, they come from a place of, let me get you this. Let me serve you,
mm-hmm.
you know, and serve someone else before you serve yourself. And I think there's this internal humility, this internal humility in Wisconsin. And maybe it's just in I don't think. I thought growing up it was maybe just in my family, mm-hmm. you know. Not that I didn't see it in other people. I saw it in other people, but when you're in a big family, you stand out.
Yeah.
You know, you stand out when your family goes to a party, you stand out when you go to church, whatever. So everybody needs to behave and sort of serve the bigger picture of the bigger family. So if someone's crying, help them out.
Yep.
You know, serve other people first. And then I left and I realized that didn't really exist in a very big way. And then I came back and realized that thing that I grew up with in my family was just everywhere in the Midwest.
Yeah.
And especially in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. you know, and it's this be nice first, ask questions later kind of deal, mm-hmm. you know, and then you get more into the university, like Madison, that sifting and winnowing. And I'm a journalism major, but this is the Wisconsin idea that sort of originated in Madison over the course of the university system has a big influence. But it's that idea of like finding truth, mm-hmm. you know, and getting at truth. And it's through the sifting and winnowing of which lone truth will be found. And, you know, as a journalism guy, I'm into that. But basically what it means to me is it takes hard work to get to the truth. It takes living in the gray area to understand truth. No politician is inherently all good or all bad.
Right.
You know, they have done some good things, even though they're largely not good. But mm-hmm. if to not acknowledge the good things somebody has done is to allow other people to say, see, you're wrong about this, and throw everything out and just ignore an argument or a conversation where you can really start to make some headway is if you give a little, you take a little. And I think at the heart, that's what makes Wisconsin and the Midwest an important thing, that mentality. And then really the basis of it, I think, is humility and a desire to help other people.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about like when kids watch your stuff, you know, because I do, I carry this with me. It's actually one of the reasons that like, you know, personally, like given my social anxiety or like predilection to social anxiety and feeling uncomfortable, you know, I never am in a room where I'm like, oh God, you know, I'm working this room, I own this room. Or like last night when Butch Vig leaves the party downstairs, it was amazing. It was like somebody pulled the plug on the bottom of the drain. Because as soon as Butch went up to his hotel room, it was just like, party's over. Music's down. Like, the whole place clears out. I'm like, that's... I mean, this is no reason... no wonder this guy killed hair metal.
Yeah.
by, like, bringing grunge onto the scene.
Yeah.
This guy is very magnetic. And as a kid, like, I looked at Butch as at least a guy who grew up in southwestern Wisconsin. And, like, he made it.
Yeah.
You know, he made it out. Do you ever think about that identity, like what you want your lasting identity to be?
I think that's a really good question. Do you want to just interview, do the rest of the podcast? You want to be the new host of the podcast?
Yeah, no, but...
lasting identity, I think it's just someone who didn't take himself too seriously, someone who helped other people, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And made people laugh, gave people some laughs, helped some people who need help, and nothing extravagant mm-hmm. or more, mm-hmm. you know? Because I think that's all we need to do as people. And it doesn't matter if you have a big following, no following, just your neighbor. Did you... were you a little bit better today than you were yesterday? Did you help someone today that you didn't help yesterday? I think that's a good thing. What about you? Same question. Same freaking great question.
Oh, man.
Oh, shit.
my legacy? I don't know. I mean, I guess, honestly, going back to that kind of Midwestern humility, and that's not to say that I don't feel it. It is an amazing thing to have people reach out to you, come up to you and be like, oh my gosh, I love your show. I love what you do. All those pieces. It really is endearing that people watch. Oftentimes I forget that people watch the program that I participate in.
Mm-hmm.
And because I really try and be in that moment with the people that we're profiling, I kind of like when I watch the episodes, when they come out of the edit and I don't see them, before the edit is finished. So I watch it fresh, just like everyone else does. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, kind of relive that experience. And most of the time, if I watch it, it's a really positive affirmation. I really want to answer your question. I want somewhere between like a Guy Fieri and a Mr. Rogers.
Oh, that's nice.
I really want people to feel seen and loved. I want them to feel proud of what they do and why they wake up in the morning. And that passion is focused and it's beautiful. And what they're contributing to the planet, even if it's just by waking up in the morning, is still valid and worthy and awesome. And on the other end, like if we can roll in some delicious flavor profiles, or we can learn something about an ingredient or a farming method or just the really unique people that do it, then, you know, I hope that's the legacy that people remember. And, you know, being kind. Like, I try and be kind. I believe in that random acts of kindness. And if we can create even a small fraction of positivity to put into the world on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, on a minute-by-minute basis, I think we're doing the best that we can. So that's, I think that's what I'd like my legacy to be. That and like, you know, any kid who's watching this from a small town, any place who feels marginalized by the fact that you're from someplace between, in my instance, Minneapolis and Chicago, or, you know, maybe it's La Crosse and Madison, if you know Wisconsin geography, you can do it. Whatever that dream is. I followed a dude who made his dream happen, Butch. And watching him come into prominence and like, holy shit, you're from Viroqua, Wisconsin? It birthed in me this sense of identity, like, you know, if he can do it, I can do it too. And I think, like, watching you do what you do, you know, there are people out there who love the medium of humor right now. And they always have, and they always should. You're going to start emulating knockoffs here pretty quick. The Viola voice and
that's how you know it when you get your knockoffs
exactly
going. It's good though, and I think, like, you know, you are, you know, kind of paving the way for not just making it, but also making it in a way that I think is good for community and good for the planet and good for all that other happy horse shit as some of my family might call it, you know?
I love your family. Yeah. I think that that is, like, one of the under-celebrated aspects of your own personal identity. It's just, every time I've kind of had contact with any of them, they're just lovely humans. Yeah. And it is. It's based in humility, and that's not to say that families don't have, you know, all their own drama and bullshit. But, man, it's evident that you come from a place of love.
Oh, yeah.
And,
A lot of love. Might not be outwardly expressed some on a regular basis.
Yeah.
But it is in deeds and in words that don't include love, but includes, be careful out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Watch out for deer, you know.
What's your love language? Do you know? Have you ever looked that up?
My love language?
Yeah, is it like, you know.
Free booze?
Free booze.
I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You give Charlie Barron's a free drink, he will put out.
Yeah. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. You know, honestly, it's acts of service.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that was like, I think this growing up in a big family, this growing up in the Midwest, it's what can I do you for, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
What can I do for you?
Yeah.
You know, do you for is a different question. That's sort of a prostitution type question now that I think about that more deeply.
And it's not that kind of a hotel room.
It's not. Would you like the service? Yeah, man. I mean, what's your love language? Is it similar? Or you seem to be you're more of an earthy guy coming from that part of the state. You're more into the feelings and the conversation. I'm getting that.
Yeah.
Vibe from you.
You know, interestingly, like, I'm a words of affirmation person.
I can see it.
I'm my own worst self-critic.
We have to be.
Exactly.
We have to put ourselves down so we can put other people up.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can't all be put up.
No, but yeah. You know, like, it's a hard conversation that, you know, I definitely struggle with. So, like, you know, the words of affirmation really come through for me. Like, hey, you're doing this. or, you know, I have taken on the role of telling people that I'm proud of them.
Yeah, you told me that today.
I know, man.
And it made me feel awkward.
Of course it did. Yeah, because we're not also hearing it.
Also, I enjoy you pumping my tires. Yeah. But now I can't just tell you I'm proud of you.
No, you don't have to. You don't have to.
Well, I feel it. It's
true. Thank you, man.
Because you do really amazing shit.
Well, so do you.
Thanks, man.
Awesome.
Want a date?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Bromance.
That's a joke. He's got a wife and kids.
Kids, okay. Yeah. Oh, exactly. Oh, and the DMs light up.
And the
you're married?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the struggle.
Do you get some weird DMs?
Oh, God.
You get some thirsty Diane's over there in Walworth County.
And I think this is maybe the difference between the demographic that we share. I get a lot of gilfs. Gilfs.
Ah, that away. Now, if you don't know what that is, use the internet.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it's there for. But I mean,
good for you.
Well, kind of. I mean, it's interesting. I wonder often
how do they spy?
Yeah, usually through the Insta, you know. And then it's just kind of like some of them really put it out there. Some of them are not subtle.
How so?
Oh, I mean, you get the pics. Have you ever
gotten an older gal sending you a pic?
Yeah, exactly. Mainly boobs.
Boobs.
You know,
like cleavage shots.
Cleavage or like, you know, getting frisky, you're so hot. And I, you know.
Nice, dude.
Yeah, it's
good
it's,
for you.
It's really appreciated. What are your DMs like?
You know, actually, okay, so this is a funny story. I was on Facebook. I was going through my messages. This was early on. I don't often go through a lot of my DMs anymore. And my team has access to all my stuff.
Exactly.
Which is very helpful, and I really appreciate them. And my sister has that access, and she is not a fan of what some people have said. But I was on Facebook, and my mom walked in the door. I was in her kitchen. And I as she walked in, I turned around to look at her as I was hitting the down arrow to the next message. And I'm like, hey, mom, how's it going? She goes, oh, my gosh. Looks at my computer. It's just boobs.
Yep.
Nips, areolas, the whole thing. And she was like, oh, my God, what are you doing? I was like, oh, my God, what am I doing? I was like, I was just going through messages. She was like, they sent you that?
Yes.
And I was like, But nobody believes that story. But I would not, I mean, not nobody believes it. I had a hard time convincing her that I did not know that was on my computer.
Right, right.
At least I think I had a hard time. Maybe she believed me right away, but I just felt like I needed to double down on how I did not have this up.
I wasn't actively pursuing this in your kitchen.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Spanking at your mom's kitchen, that's a new low.
I mean, you know, I would have at least slammed the thing down had I known. Jeez, Louise.
Show some respect. How does that make you feel? It makes me, most of the time, it makes me so awkward. Kind of like when I told you I was proud of you.
Yeah.
Or when you made the comment about, like, if I'm not making eye contact with you, it's not because I'm not listening. Like, you know, there were periods in my life where I didn't make eye contact with my father for years.
Oh, yeah, that's the move right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's the move.
Your dad can see right into your soul.
I know.
That's the thing. He can see if you're lying. Exactly. He can see if you're on a little of this and all that. You know?
Right.
That makes sense, not making eye contact with your dad.
Yeah.
And he said, look at me in the eyes.
No.
Yeah.
I should just see your disappointment.
Yeah.
No, my dad is he's a lovely human. But how does that make you feel? Like
getting weird
The throwing.
Did that deadbolt just turn?
Probably. It's Butch and his family on the other side. So they're gonna kick the door down.
Are we too loud for
No,
Butch?
No. Trust me, I've spent enough time with Butch.
Oh, okay. All
it's right. fine.
That sounds good. How's it make me feel? It's kind of funny a lot of times.
Yeah,
it's funny. Yeah. And I don't think it happens often.
Yeah.
Again, I got to probably get in. I got to be more responsive in those things. But I don't have time.
No.
I shouldn't say that because I try to get back to a few messages every couple days.
Mm-hmm.
But I hate being in front of my phone.
Totally.
And it takes me away from the creative. It takes it like... being super responsive to all those things makes me, it turns my brain a little weird.
Yeah.
Because you're just in front of your phone and then you're distracted and I got ADD, so it's a whole issue. And then I'm off reading the news on this thing. I'm like, this is not what I'm supposed to be doing in this period of time.
Yeah.
But I'm always flattered when people, send me, flattering things.
Yeah.
But I'm trying not to say that in a way of multiplying the weirdness.
We're in real dangerous country, yeah. Right?
No, I, because my sister reads them, and Colleen and Dante and my brother John, I mean, a lot, they all have access to it, so they'll all read them, so be careful what you send, folks.
Same. I have people who go through that, and it's just like, oh, this is not good.
Yeah.
And most of the time, it gets screened before it gets to me, you know, which is... It's not, I don't think it's impersonal, but at the same time, like, people, you know, they create personas online for whatever purpose serves them, and, like, it's just too dicey.
Yeah.
I wanted to say, if you want to show me your boobs, just come up and show me your boobs, but I don't know if I really want that reputation.
Yeah, the old-fashioned way,
you know? Exactly.
I mean, how you see it in those 80s movies.
Right.
And then you can sign them and rock and roll, you know?
Oh, that's hysterical.
This is fun. We're almost at time, but before I go, I just want to throw a few things at you. One of my favorite culinary treats, my mom used to make this for me, and me being, you know, a divorced guy in my 30s, I make it for myself often. Grilled peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah.
You feel good about it?
I do. I have an emotional reaction. I lost an episode of Guy's Grocery Games on Food Network to Fluffernutter in the championship. I made my own cheese curds. I had made, like, poutine, basically.
Yeah.
Late night guilty pleasure, 6 ingredients or less.
Yeah.
And then I lost to peanut butter, marshmallow, and chocolate sandwich.
That's a Boston thing, isn't it?
It was a chef from L.A. Black Market was the name of the restaurant. Super cool human, but, like, I think I do have a little PTSD around that because my kids... love to remind me, hey, remember that time you lost on national television to a Fluffernutter?
Sounds like that's in the same box of things next to your sandwich
exactly.
Artist or whatever the hell it was at Subway.
It's become quite clear to me, it's no wonder I need words of affirmation in my life. Please.
What are some meals a divorced guy in their 30s can make and impress people?
Sure. I think, well, one of the things that you would have working in your favor... you know, I love the idea of eating mindfully. Mm-hmm. And I'm not always able to do it when you're on the road. Like sometimes it's just like, I gotta get calories in, before I go do the thing. So you can't really be as articulate. I would say if you're trying to impress people, learn one backstory of one of the ingredients. You came to my restaurant and I served you Upland's Pleasant Ridge Reserve, which is the most awarded cheese in American history.
And I remember that. Yeah. And it was delicious.
It is.
And I think it got tastier with the story.
Exactly.
Because honestly, I was paying attention to the taste.
Right, right. So I think that's a really clever way to, like, get people engaged in what you're doing. And quite frankly, you know, you could bomb the rest of the dinner. Man, that cheese is really cool, Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I like doing on that same vein, I buy 4 different cheddars from 4 different cheddar makers in the state of Wisconsin. Cheddar is actually a verb. So it's the way in which you make the cheese curd. And I like to line them up in progression, and we do a tasting. Like, I want to know what you're tasting. I want to know what flavor sensations are going over your palate. Here's a second one. What do you get on this one? Like human beings, emotions are often difficult to change, but perspective is not. And I really want people to lean into the different perspectives that these cheesemakers are presenting you with. It's not uniform. As a matter of fact, it's widely varied, just like all of us. And I think in that level of awareness, like, you bought 4 pieces of cheese, serve it with some crackers, you know, but, like, taking people through that mental progression, making them think about what part of their palates are fired up. Super simple hack.
So I don't have to cook.
You don't have to cook.
Damn thing.
Dude.
I just got to go buy 4 cheeses.
4 cheeses, exactly. And get your game on. You know, like, talk about it. Talk about where the cheeses came from. You know, I think that's a really fun way to engage people's brains. And in working with the Center for Healthy Minds here in Madison, the neuroscience department, you know, when we talk about that, we talk about, like, mentally focusing, trying to articulate that part that you're actually tasting or the sensation. it's really, really valuable, and it connects people on an emotional level. So much of my career, going back to your time as a cashier, pretzel joint.
Well, I was a pretzel roller.
Oh, my bad.
Occasionally got demoted to cashier, all right? I also made lemonade. I stocked the dough. I washed dishes, all right? So I was a multi.
Yeah.
What I should have done is wash dishes first. That would have gotten the grease off my hand.
DJ Grease Finger over here.
Yeah. It's tough getting out of your finger.
Oh, seriously.
You know? You get an old bike chain, that's going to be there a while.
I get emails all the time. Like, can you please clean your fingernails? And sometimes they're not even mine. Like, you put a farmer on camera, and, like, you know, of course they're not going to have clean fingernails. They're
honestly
growing your food. Yeah.
No one cares. You know, you need a pedicure.
Seriously.
Or a manicure.
A manicure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pedicure's feet. And that would be a much different food show.
And you're a man, so you need a manicure.
Yes. Yes.
That was a good joke.
That was. I like that one.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very
you
much.
You really put the low-hanging fruit there together.
Yep. Tastes so good. You know.
Oh, man. If we actually do the job of curing epilepsy today, mm-hmm. and you have a huge part of that, is that also a manicure?
That would be a man taking the credit for something a lot of other people have done.
Is that something that men do?
No.
Never.
Oh, let me explain it to you. It's called mansplaining.
Tell me.
That's part of this whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I'm a woke. I would never do that.
No, yeah. You definitely strike me.
Yeah,
me no. too. But I mean, just because I'm nice.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to offend anybody.
No, me either. Yeah.
So I have one last question for you. Okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Again, not how this interview podcast works.
I know.
But
I get it.
Fantastic.
It's unconventional.
Yeah.
Charlie, when you think about, like, the character that kind of, like, brought you up, like Manitowoc Minute.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm.
How does the creative process affect the evolution of that character? Do you think about, like, how you age as the Manitowoc Minute guy, as uh-huh. Charlie Behrens, and, like, how much of that is wrapped in your creative process? Do you feel the need to overcome it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Manitowoc Minute, the show that originally took all of this off, was a very fun and great and wonderful thing. And it still exists in the live show. I'll do a live mm-hmm. Manitowoc Minute, this and that. I'll do these. But when it was there, it existed in this internet ecosystem that allowed for horizontal videos, that allowed for over-the-shoulder news mm-hmm. Images, and then to make jokes off that. Now formats have changed. And likewise, you can't necessarily do a hodgepodge of news stories in a 3-minute video. The algorithms aren't pushing that
sure.
right now.
Yeah.
So then you change it to now it's a vertical thing.
Wow.
And so the actual formats change, and you do it in front of a news story, and you try to do one news story, and you try to choose the right news story, because otherwise, if you do a bunch of them, it doesn't, the amount of work that goes into it, it doesn't get the reach that it needs in order to create a sustainable thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of have to change with the way these algorithms change.
That's wild.
It is wild. And what's even more wild is the people at Facebook, YouTube, all those places, they don't know how their algorithms work. So and we're all kind of guessing. And you're tweaking, and you're just doing this stuff along the way. So a lot of my evolution in this, that's one aspect of it. But the other aspect is what do I want to say was great and leave it as something that happened
mm-hmm.
and revisit it occasionally
mm-hmm.
and versus going forward and finding new things? Because comedy is all about surprise, and you can't do the same thing over and over and over again and expect it to have the original pop it had. You have to understand when something like food
yeah.
has gone past its prime. It's time to put it in the mulch.
Yep.
You know, and I'm not saying that's the case with the Manitowoc Minute stuff, but what I am saying is it needs to change format. It needs to evolve. It is like any other form of art. It needs to evolve. And it could have a return, you mm-hmm. know? But you can't cling so tightly to something that worked once and expect it to continue working. You have to have enough humility to know, like, okay, I gotta serve these folks in a different way.
Yeah.
And I gotta serve my creative energy in a different way. So that's what I've been doing with sketches, with stand-up, with all that, and I've really enjoyed it. Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Well, you know what? It's the same damn thing you do.
Totally.
Changing your menu every day.
Totally.
And also working with what's there. So look at those similarities.
Completely. Yeah. But I've always wondered on the process, from like a comedy writer's standpoint, and like someone who's like putting themselves out there and doing this and doing this and doing this, like, how do you create the evolution of a character that suddenly stands alone? And maybe it takes you back into like the, you know, the over the shoulder prop and like commenting on news story. But like, how is that formulated? And I think one of the, I'm going to say like one of the absolute joys of modern technology is watching artisans like you evolve. You know, there are I mean, it's cool.
Yeah.
It's super cool. Like, you're right. You can't say stagnant. What got you here won't get you there.
Mm-hmm.
But watching you live that process, and I mean live it, with the amount of content that you put out and put into the world, it's truly fascinating. And I'm a fan.
It's fun, man. Thank you. Yeah, you get up here, you plateau, and then you say, you can see your numbers plateau, and then you're saying, okay, so... this is an opportunity for me to either, like, get hyper-focused on the numbers, get into this point of paranoia or whatever, down the path of paranoia, or you can sort of bushwhack your way, we were talking about this last night, bushwhack your way to the path of creativity and say, I'm going to choose to just compartmentalize that paranoia, that fear, that whatever, you know, shove it deep down. As a Midwest guy, you're good at shoving your feelings deep down. Just live in this path of like what could be and dream it big and think and get a little wild with it. And then you'll find something that hopefully, boom, you have another video takeoff, another series takeoff, another whatever. And it's just allowing yourself to not live in fear and to live into that thing. And on that note, where do you see yourself evolving to, or do you think you've met kind of your prime evolution?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think about that every single day, you know, and I think about it under the pretenses of like, is it better to burn out than fade away? Can you? One of my dear friends, like Chris Borland, right? Like, he walked away from the NFL just as he was starting to come up, you know, crazy accolades, won an All-American linebacker here from Wisconsin. And then he just politely stopped playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
Shifting that momentum. So much of our lives is like progressive momentum rolling, right?
Mm-hmm.
I had a really good mentor when I was a law clerk who kind of pulled me aside and said, just be aware of the momentum. Be aware of like where the energy in your life is taking you. I think that the progression for me...
You got that from a law clerk?
I got it from a lawyer.
Oh, a lawyer. You were the law clerk.
I was the law clerk, yeah.
Damn. That lawyer had some weed in his desk.
Maybe.
Tell me that right now.
But, you know, I really... I've had the opportunity to be mindful of that, you know? Where I want this to go, well, like, I want people to just feel the same joy that I feel in being able to walk around a farmer's market and have friends or neighbors, or feel a sense of pride when they go to their favorite restaurant and be like, yeah, this is from my hometown. I'm so excited to be back here. Or maybe it's opening a Spotted Cow. You get off that plane coming in from outside the state, and you get to the airport and like, bam, they can understand the uniquity of the ingredients in this place. And maybe it broadens their perspective of who we are and what we're doing just a little bit.
Mm.
I hope that that's the evolution. I'm trying to write a cookbook right now. It's one of the most frustrating creative endeavors I've ever undertaken, because writing takes discipline, as you know. You know, and creating a formula and like being a restaurateur and a television host and a dad and a partner, like, it's all a roller coaster. So trying to really set that time aside and be disciplined, it's hard work. I think that is the actual hardest part of the process. So hopefully, you know, it can at least have another medium to tell the stories. And, you know, I hope to be able to connect people over food, well into retirement. And then, did you ever watch that show, Northern Exposure?
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a chef on there, Adam, who, he was barefoot, always wearing a stocking cap, you know, kind of just like left New York to fade into obscurity in the Alaskan wilderness. I hope that there's enough wilderness in the Driftless left that when I decide, you know what, I'm done here, I can just kind of blend in.
just be a hill fella.
Yeah, exactly. Just be Luke Zom. And, you know, still hopefully carry the joy of connection with people, but like at the same time, the pressure of getting out and actually doing it. I hope that it fades as I age. I'm not sure. Maybe it won't.
Maybe you just get a callous enough soul that going and doing it and doesn't faze you anymore.
Exactly.
That's what I'm working on.
It's just that dead soul.
Yeah. Or it's a liberated one. Yeah. It's callous.
Totally.
Well, it's like working man's hands. You can just grab something. It's not as big of a deal as someone who's... It's calluses. Don't have the calluses. Yeah. Like playing guitar. You gotta get calluses on your fingers.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can't hold a bar chord.
Exactly. And you gotta, you know, to crank it up there, up and down. Yeah. I have a question about that, too. Like, when you and Adam, because you guys are extremely prolific, congratulations on the Billboard success recently.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, dude, that's rad.
It was fun. Yeah.
I bet.
Shout out to everyone who got an album.
Yeah.
All them.
That's fantastic. Yeah, congratulations.
That's how you get on those charts. People buy the albums. Thanks, guys. Yeah.
But you know, like walking through the songwriting process and like the actual composition, do you find that really different than writing comedy?
It is different. Like punchlines have to. It's harder to write punchlines in songs because the syllables have to match. I almost like think coming up with the punchline and then building the lead up to it in a different way, and I'm not great at it. Mm-hmm. A lot of, but it's a new fun thing to think about. And because when I'm on stage, I can sort of massage my way in, or if I feel like someone missed something in the audience, I can reiterate. Mm-hmm. With a song, you got boom, 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 and then punch, you know? Yeah. And we've got one song we're playing today is pretty good on the punchlines. Another song is just kind of a fun song.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of like in the vein of John Prine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying like, you know, that he's the king of it. But yeah. Very clever, fun, takes somewhat humorous, but not necessarily all punchline filled. Not like a comedy songwriter.
Right.
But I do think that's a thing I want to go for and hit those punchlines hard in songs.
Totally.
Sometimes too. We have a few that do it, and we have a few that are more just songs, you know? So it's a fun blend right now, but I haven't mastered it yet.
Yeah. I have to say, I find Adam to be one of the most enjoyable humans. He's just... He radiates. He effuses happiness.
Ah, should we go after beer?
Yeah, exactly.
I love doing it. Because
it is. Yeah. Well, I play Scrabble with Adam. I don't know if you know this. And like, you know, he's such a bullshitter.
Yeah.
He will, you know, he knows all the two-letter words, which is a disservice to the game. I want to be real clear about that. If you memorized all the two-letter words, you're not actually playing Scrabble.
Adam Girls should be disqualified.
He should. Scrabble. But, you know, then, like, you know, he'll put out words that kind of sound good in our own Midwestern dialect. And I love the fact that he's such a sandbagger. You can't ever tell if he's bullshitting or not. And so I want to give him the benefit of the doubt because he's kind. And, you know, he went to UW Stevens Point, so obviously. Potentially. God, I told him about the last time I was in Point. I was driving down the road in the Wisconsin foodie van. And we were following a truck, and it was the best bumper sticker I've seen in a while. It said, Stevens Point, doing lines and banging nines. And I was like, in what alternate universe do you live, brother?
Who makes that?
I don't know. But I was moved. I was like, bravo. Just clapping as I drove by.
Well played. Well played, truck with that bumper sticker.
Goal pointers.
Speaking of bumper stickers, Adam has no shortage on his car.
But seriously.
It's a whole other story we can get into. Well, thanks, man. This was super fun. I'm glad we could knock it out in the AC hotel in Madison, Wisconsin.
AC, what's up?
Thanks, buddy.
Tron Barons, you're a treasure.
A real pleasure, my guy. And I got to get back to the Driftless and
try
some more of that beautiful, lovely, delicious food.
Keep them laughing.
And I also got to go buy some cheese.
Get on your cheese game.
Yeah.
Boom.
All right, that is it for my conversation with Luke Zahm. You can follow him at Forever Forward Wiss on Instagram. You can follow the Cripes Cast on all platforms. Had a real good time talking with Luke, though. Make sure you check him out. Check out his show on PBS. Go over to the Driftless Cafe. Enjoy yourself some of their food. Oh, my gosh, it's good. I'll tell you what, I was there not too long ago. So check it out. And also, I guess that's it. That's it. Maybe I'll see you on the road. Maybe I'll see you on a show. Thank you all for listening. Hope you all keep her moving. And do me a favor now and watch for deer. Okay, and stay, keep the wheels on the roads, all right? If it gets slick out there, drive slow. Slow and go. There you go. All right. Bye-bye now.
So roll out the barrel and get the band brewing. Life's got you down. Just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin. The Badgers say it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No, you gotta keep her moving.